we very firmly believe that like progress is better than perfection. And you don't need to do every single thing at once. You can't. We've tried to do it in some ways, and we've had to dial things back and say, what's the most important thing that we can do right now that we're proud of and excited about? And then let's still have a plan that we're internally committed to because we feel like it's important and we're going to improve over time. So like one thing we talked about, the hot dogs. We shipped a pallet of hot dogs that we wanted to get grass-fed, grass-finished across the country when it made no sense because we felt like it was the right thing to do. What that became is we learned about grass-fed, grass-finished, and 100% grass-fed. So what this means, especially for listeners that aren't like operating food businesses, because you go to the grocery store, everyone eats. If you're buying or you're shopping somewhere, it says grass-fed, grass-fed meat, grass-fed tallow, whatever it is. Unfortunately, that doesn't mean anything. And that's, I think, what's really scary about the food industry and shopping and grocery and marketing around this stuff is this concept of greenwashing.
What's up? My name is CJ Finley, and this is the Thrive on Life podcast. I started a brand called Thrive on Life to help other mission-based people, brands, and businesses thrive. Each week, we interview people on topics of business, health, relationships, mindset, and much more to help us thrive in all areas of life. If the messages in this podcast resonate with you, but you're still feeling a little bit stuck in actually implementing these ideas, I'd love to help you on a more personalized level or connect you with somebody that can. So please reach out. Also, if you've got a friend who you know could benefit from hearing this episode, please share the love with them. My goal is always to spread positive impact through the sharing of knowledge, and I would be honored if you could help me achieve this goal.
What is up, Thrive fam? CJ Finley here again with another episode of the Thrive on Life podcast. And today I'm sitting here with a new friend of mine, Jesse Koenig. I met him at my buddy Eric Hinman's Founders Retreat. This is the second one that I've went to, and I always meet amazing people. And Jesse here has a really cool story, and I'm excited to dive deep into it. But before we get into it, I want to ask you how you're feeling after the hardest mile that you did with Eric in the retreat.
I'll say the easiest description is very sore. The group of people there are wildly fit, top of their game. I wouldn't say I'm completely out of shape, but definitely on the lower end of that spectrum of people that were there. And they were not taking it easy on us. We were getting out there and getting after it. So I'm going to need a couple of days to get back to homeostasis here, but feeling good.
What did you expect coming into the couple of days with everybody here? Because obviously you probably saw it on social media. You know Eric, and you kind of know what you're getting yourself into, but what were your thoughts going into it the past couple of days?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm somebody who I like to challenge myself. Like I ran a marathon in 2019 just to do it and didn't do like a really sophisticated training plan and things. So I figured like worst case scenario, I probably won't hurt myself. There's going to be lots of sauna and ice, so I'll be able to recover a little bit. And I just wanted to go and kind of check it out. But it was a really awesome experience. I would recommend if people have the opportunity to do something like that where it puts you out of your comfort zone. It's a lot of hard work. You may be a little nervous. All in all, it was definitely really awesome people, and the bonding you get, it's kind of like that competitive team sports environment that I think so many of us are craving that you don't have for a long time into adulthood. It's nice to just like bring a bunch of people together, sweat, work super hard, be hurting a little bit, but you're doing it as a group. So it was super great.
I love that. Yeah. And it's something that you hit the nail on the head with. We have that competitive team spirit when we're younger, but we seem to lose it as we get older, especially as men. It's something that we grow up doing, and then it kind of just disappears when you get into the work world. And hearing your story when we were actually in the sauna kind of piqued my interest in terms of how you knew at a young age that maybe this alternative path was more for me. And that's why it doesn't surprise me that you signed up for a marathon without really having much training, is because like that's pretty much what entrepreneurship is.
Yeah,
like definitely. Zero training. You just got to jump in there, and it's going to be a marathon. That's going to be a long time.
Yep.
And there's going to be bumps along the way. And one of the things I wanted to start here with was revolving around how you jumped into the truck industry, which is super tough, super competitive. And you brought kind of a different lens to that whole world. Because when we think about our food system and how there's so much on social media nowadays about seed oils and grass-fed meat and all these things that somebody could be doing to improve their health, it seems overwhelming. And one of the things that you said yesterday that really stood out was, we already have this fast food system. It's already operating. It's huge. It's across the globe. How do we start carving our way to just like improving the fast food, because if people are going to continue to eat it, how do we just improve that? How do we solve problems for them? And the first question I have for you is like, why did that become an obsession or a problem that's even worth solving for you when there's so much out there that you could be putting your energy towards?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's something we sort of stumbled into. It wasn't this like grand vision from day one. We were just trying to solve like a pain point of how do we live a lifestyle we're going to be excited about when we first started. So we were in college studying business and finance, thinking might end up on Wall Street or consulting. And there's nothing wrong with those things. But when I started to like sort of roll the tape forward and think about what my life is going to look like, knowing friends who've gotten into it and sort of their lifestyle, it just wasn't that exciting and appealing. And we sort of just procrastinated the internship process and what we wanted to do. And we're like, hey, let's solve a problem right now. And there was not great food on the campus we were at in college and undergrad. Started trying to figure out like, oh, let's start a food business. And we didn't have background in food. I'd worked in some restaurants growing up. We all liked to eat food. We weren't chefs or cooking a lot, even on our campus days. But we just started this concept, had fun, started the reactions from people, and just started realizing like building a brand and building something for yourself and being able to interact in that environment all the time is just such an amazing thing. And I think the immediate feedback of Loop is so exciting because you like, it's not like you build this product, you ship it, and you never hear about it. It's like you're serving something to someone. You see them take that bite, you hear the reaction right away, and you know, oh shit, that wasn't great. We need to fix it. Or like, oh wow, this is great. We're really on to something. So it wasn't a grand vision then, but when we graduated from college, we started our first food truck. We thought, you know, worst case scenario, it's a fun adventure for a couple of years and we'll get real jobs. And we thought that's probably the likely scenario. Went to DC, had done some research and kind of like made this mix of business and pleasure decision where it was like a good place to be market wise, but it was also just like a fun place to be going post grad. Started like figuring out how we're going to launch this concept. We've been doing these crazy funky hot dog thing. And what got us into thinking about food and sourcing was like, we had no background. We didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know what the right thing to do was. So I know like the sexy thing people talk about is like first principles thinking nowadays. Like we were sort of forced into it of like, all right, we don't know what to do. This is 2014 from like a point in time. There was Food Inc. documentaries. There was the Omnivore's Dilemma book. There was all this stuff. So we start reading and taking this academic approach and then start thinking about like, okay, we're doing a hot dog thing. We think there's something here because it's mystery meat. We could do something more fun, more nostalgic, this great experience. But if we're wildly successful, like we're going to be contributing to the system that we watched the documentaries and were horrified about and read the books. We're like, holy shit, this is terrible. So we started thinking about that and we learned about grass-fed, grass-finished beef. And I'm sure we'll dive into some details on this stuff later. But that was sort of the first thing we hit on. We're like, it doesn't feel right to us to support the normal system if we're going to do this food thing. So let's do what we think feels right to us, be proud of and be excited to do. So we shipped in pallets of hot dogs or a pallet of hot dogs from this supplier we found in the Midwest. We had no business doing that. We had no business. We hadn't sold a single hot dog and I didn't even have a food truck. Bought a pallet of hot dogs, shipped them, found a place to store them, got our food truck gun running in like a commissary kitchen, started going out in the streets and just like slinging hot dogs for a couple of years and hustling, doing farmers markets, doing all this stuff. And because we had such a different out there, like out of the box perspective on food, I think it really resonated with people because we were three guys at the time, friends, 22 years old. We were like native to Instagram at the time. This was like food porn. People were taking photos. We're like sharing stuff, having fun. We're there every single day. We're touching every piece of, you know, product that's going out the truck. And we started to see people getting so excited and having this great experience. And that kind of got us through the first 2 to 3 years. And we had this moment of like, all right, this has been fun. We've won best new food truck awards. We've like gotten some praise. People like the brand. It's a funky thing. But we started to think like, we sort of need to decide right now, like, are we really going all in on this thing? Because it's a really hard business. Restaurants are super tough, hard to make money. It's a hard lifestyle. You're grinding, you know, beyond what a lot of people, I think, going into startups are doing. It's a lot of manual labor, cutting potatoes, cleaning fryers, driving around, finding parking spots, all this crazy stuff we were doing for a couple of years. So we had this moment of like, there's this huge problem. There's this super conventional system that's really broken. There's not a lot of people doing it because most people in the food world and the culinary world have learned and sort of just adopted the way of doing things that they were told. So we realized there's a huge opportunity. It's going to be really difficult, but if we're going to stick with this and make this like our long-term vision of what we want to do, we need to make sure this is something that we're super stoked about. And we think has like not just a good business model that can grow and hopefully make money. I think we're very mission-oriented. We're also not running a nonprofit. Like we'd love to be in a position where we're adding tons of value to people's lives. And we're also at some point, hopefully not having to worry about being paycheck to paycheck and money and those types of things would be great. But that is like really the inflection point. We started moving the business to where it is today in a little bit of a different lane and no longer doing funky hot dogs and more into this fast food world. Like you mentioned, it was a lot of the stuff you kind of led off with around, we feel like the biggest impact we can make is moving the needle a little bit in the worst part of the food system. Rather than like nothing against Sweetgreen, incredible company. We were so inspired by them early on, but we didn't want to go and make like a better salad concept for someone who's already being really conscious about how they eat. We thought, what if we went the opposite direction? And we said, hey, if we can make this 5, 10, 20, 50% better for like the most ubiquitously eaten thing all across the country and the world, like that's how we can drive a lot of impact. If we can make it taste as good, but do things the right way and like, maybe it's still junk food in some ways, and maybe it's something that's not going to necessarily make someone the fittest, best version of themselves. But like worst case scenario, we can at least support a food system that we're proud of and help move the needle for farmers and producers and all the other different moving parts that are in the background. Best case scenario, we can teach people about where their food is coming from and sort of give them that first thing around like, why does this taste better? Why do I not feel so bad after I eat it? And then leaning into that and having some of the education around, well, that's weird. Like, where did it come from? And like, nowadays we have a board in our store where it shows our sourcing of things like our bread from a local bakery, regenerative grass-fed, grass-finished meat from an awesome farm in North Carolina. So we try to like slowly are getting more into the education side now, and we're still working on it and evolving. But it was really that like first principles approach from day one saying, this is broken. Someone needs to fix it. And then about 3 years in, we were like, okay, if we're going to do this, I guess we should try to fix the big problem here and really go all in on it. And we've just been on that journey and kind of evolving and iterating and growing ever since.
Yeah, hell of a story. And something you hit on there that I wanted to kind of dissect a little bit is when you mentioned going the path of bringing higher quality to more of the mass. And I don't think many people think about, like, from a numbers standpoint, take me for instance. I get high quality foods, but I'm like the 1%. So there's 99% other people out there that have this range of different foods that they're consuming on a weekly basis. I don't eat fast food at all, but the average person, there's probably statistics out there of like how many fast food meals they have per week. And they're not having any conversations around any of this. And that's where I think your true impact is when you mentioned the education. What came to mind with me is like your food is just starting a conversation. And that conversation is then connecting people more deeply to what they're actually ingesting. And you're talking about a larger percentage of people than the Sweetgreen people, which I would consider myself one of those people. Unfortunately, I was forced to do it because I have celiac disease, but I think your viewpoint on it is spot on because we need to, as a society, do a better job of what I call like a waterfall of, if I have information that I know that nutrition is important to my life and longevity and happiness, if I'm just speaking into an echo chamber of people at Sweetgreen that already know this stuff, and then you go on to make maybe a Sweetgreen plus, it doesn't really move the needle as Jesse is talking about. And the reason that I'm kind of thinking out loud here is anybody that's listening, this can apply in not just food, it can apply in all other areas of life. When we were talking about sauna and ice, like how many people don't have access to that? Well, what's the lowest common denominator of that is, okay, getting a cold shower, right? So I've said this on the podcast before, but when you're talking about food, especially with social media, internet, it's just like gets lost in like, you cut out seed oils or you die. Like you're going to die from seed oils. You have like two parties. It's just like people that don't give a fuck at all, or like you're going to die if you eat seed oils. Where I love how you're kind of coming at it from, how do we meet in the middle? And that's where I'd love to take it back here. Just personally, I'd love to understand more of like that food truck mentality of how you got started up and kind of the problems that you were solving along the way of that. Because I think what also stops people in the beginning of business is you didn't know what you were doing. And instead of looking at that as like a problem. You looked at it as like, well, I think it's an advantage that we don't know what we're doing. We're going to like solve these problems in a way that feels great to us. And I'd love to learn a little bit more of how did you know how to do that? What were you researching? Did you have mentors? Like, what did your lifestyle look like then to allow you to even tackle the situation the way that you did?
Yeah. And just for the benefit of the listeners, to give them like a snapshot of today, because I think sometimes it's like hard to even fathom. And we feel like we still have a long way to go. But today we have one brick and mortar restaurant in DC. It's near Nat's Ballpark, where it serves like regenerative grass-fed beef smash burgers, fried chicken sandwiches, using really great sourcing, make your own fries. We're also launching this frozen french fry business, which I'm sure we'll talk about. So eliminating seed oils and some stuff. Have gotten into stadiums. We've like done all these things we would have never imagined possible from day one. So to your point, you're not going to know all the answers or have the vision. It's really about how do I solve the problem that's right in front of me? And I think one big benefit that we had that not everyone will always have, but it's a mindset that you can sort of try to stand in no matter what age you are, is we were so young getting into this, we knew that we knew nothing. So it forced us to ask tons of questions. Like I have all these memories of we were at the commissary kitchen we were at. There's these professional chefs, caterers, other food trucks, all these people that were there. And we had to use a kitchen like this to be able to run a food truck, part of the permitting process. But the benefit was we're back to back with someone who's been in the industry for 15 or 20 years. So we would just, out of necessity, ask so many questions to the point where people would just be like, what are you talking about? You don't know how to caramelize an onion? Like, what are you doing? Why do you have a food truck? And it's just like, you know, put onions in, add salt, let it sit like that. But we're like, hey, Jacob, how do you do this thing? Like, can you show us? How do you clean a fryer? Like, how do you wash your dishes faster? You guys are better at this than us. So we built this muscle super early on like these really minute details that are like, at the end of the day, where we're at today, how important it was, like you kind of just figure it out. It's manual labor. It's a lot of hard work. You could do things more efficiently, or you just, when you're not paying yourself much, you just put more hours in and figure it out. But I think what's nice is like, we built this muscle early on. We learned the value of finding people who've done the things that you're trying to be doing and asking questions and being really, really transparent around, we don't know what we're doing, or we know this part, but we think this is the thing. Like, what do you think? And if you're open to that feedback and receptive and you build real relationships that are authentic, one thing that's been amazing, particularly about the food industry, I think the health and wellness community is very similar, is that everyone wants each other to win. It's so hard as a business. The margins are really thin. It's a hard business to run. There's so many different problems and things to figure out. So once people see that you're like, you're taking it seriously, and this isn't just some like, oh, I got some big check from my parents, so now I'm going to go open a restaurant and I'm going to like just kind of sit back with a clipboard and not do the hard work. If people see you in there in the trenches trying to figure things out, they understand like, oh, this is hard. I remember when I was there. Let me help you out. So I think having that community of people that are doing the thing or have done the thing that you're trying to do and not being afraid to look stupid and just saying, hey, in this way, it doesn't make me a stupid person, but like, I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know what this thing is. How do I just get some help and get that little nugget or that lead that I can go Google and research and figure things out? So it was like a million different things. I'm sure our business, had we had more experience, could be in a lot different place, you know, 9 years in. If we could have moved faster, there's things we could have avoided. But we learned a lot of valuable lessons in our own mistakes. And then there's other things that were, could have been fatal errors that we're able to lean on mentors, friends, people in the industry, you know, just asking questions, going to other restaurants. We spent so much time in other restaurants, going to other food trucks and just observing everything. And unfortunately today I still have that like in my brain. I can't go to a restaurant and not be like looking at like, oh, what model of fryer do they use? All these things. My wife, like, it's mind boggling. She's just like, can you please just relax and enjoy what we're doing? But it's been really awesome to just like come in with tons of curiosity, have beliefs, but be really willing to change your mind about things and try things out and test them. And that's something we've really built our business on, is like, I think there's somewhat of a misconception that you need to just go all in and be this huge risk taker to go into entrepreneurship. You need to like mitigate your risk, of course. But for us, when we first started, the downside was worst case scenario, I'm going to go sleep on like my friend's couch or my parents' couch or something like that and go get a real job that I'm not going to be happy with. Like that was the worst case scenario. Sell a food truck for half the money, you know, go get a real job. Like I have so much empathy and like admiration for people that take these huge risks when they've got families and mortgages and obligations, and not to say people can't do it, but I think it's knowing what the risks are, testing as much as possible, getting that real-time feedback, not just putting something on a piece of paper and holding it in a vault and thinking you have all the magic answers, because It comes down to execution. It comes down to getting feedback from people and from the marketplace. And until you go out and ask those questions or actually try things out and try selling that product, you're not going to learn. And again, like, we started as a hot dog truck and now we do a fast food concept and a frozen French fry CPG brand. Like, we wouldn't have found those opportunities had we not just picked a thing, started running after it, started solving problems and learning about the pain points, and then picking our head up every once in a while and be like, huh, this is interesting. You know, maybe there's an opportunity here. Maybe we can shift this thing. Maybe we can make a little bit of a tweak. So I think just having that beginner's mindset and trying to remind yourself of it and not being afraid to ask for help are really big keys to success that can help people that are maybe afraid to take the leap because they don't know the answer. But the reality is most people, especially first-time founders, they don't know the answers. They're just not afraid to look stupid and they're not afraid to go ask the questions and figure it out.
Very simple but hard to follow advice right there.
Definitely.
Beginner's mindset and not being afraid to look stupid. Those are basically fears we have since when we are born.
Yes.
Do you still have the same two business partners that you did when you originally started?
One of them. So we, in that kind of like inflection point, we were thinking about the future of the business. We all had to take a really hard look in the mirror and be like, is this something we want to be doing long-term? Like, this has been like really hard. You know, where do we see ourselves in 5 or 10 years? What are we passionate about? Where do we see the direction of the business going? And we ended up doing was essentially two of us sort of took the business over at that point. I've been running with it ever since. So, you know, it was like a really amazing learning lesson the first few years of the business, but in a lot of ways, and not to put down any of the things we did, because it was a lot of work and we did a lot of great things the first few years, but it was much more of like a lifestyle business. Like, we were going to breweries and drinking beers, serving food. Like, we're 22 and 24 years old. Like, it wasn't like this crazy mastermind, big business venture. But I think as we learned a lot more and we realized like, okay, this is what we think the business needs to look like going forward. Like, are we the best people to do that? And I think that was also just like a really good lesson to learn early on, is just like finding the right partners, getting alignment, getting things on paper, making sure things are buttoned up. And like, we're all pretty friendly to this day, which is great. My business partner, Ben, and I think we also have really complementary skill sets. So it's worked out really well over the years because we now have learned, because we've done each other's jobs, we've tried everything in the business. We know like where we thrive, what things we enjoy the most in the business, where we can add the most value. And the reality for founding a company is there's going to be a lot of stuff you don't want to do, especially in the early days, and you can't afford to outsource it. But trying to lean into like your superpowers and having co-founders, having people around you that can support you and do other things. And I think just emotionally having a co-founder is such an important thing because it's a roller coaster ride. And there's a lot of times where one of you gets down in the dumps and just sort of like, are we even like, what are we doing here? Like, this isn't working the way we thought. And luckily, at least our experience is like, usually the other person is a different part of the roller coaster ride and can sort of like bring the other person up and be like, we've been here before. It's going to be fine. This too shall pass. We'll be good to go. So yeah, it's been really interesting to see how our business has evolved. And it's been just like little piecemeal steps. And I think finally, like people say, like the 10-year overnight success, not saying we're this wild success quite yet, but we're 9 years into the business. We finally feel like we have our feet under us and really understand the opportunities we have. We've figured out a lot of the moving pieces. We've found a great team. So it's been a long road. And I think that's also a great thing for people that are thinking about getting into that business. It's two things. One, I know you have a lot of books here, but a great one's the E-Myth Revisited, right? Like, that whole thing of someone who wants to make, they love making pies and they open a pie shop and they realize they never touch dough and make a pie again because they're doing all the other things. Like, going in eyes wide open and understanding that like opening a business is about solving problems and building teams and building an organization is not necessarily doing the thing you love to be doing all the time. And the other part of it is, you know, you have to just figure things out as you go. And, you know, it's going to change, it's going to develop and evolve. And you have to be flexible and adaptable and try to figure those things out as you go.
Yeah, you start realizing really quickly, like there's a huge difference between being a freelancer, being an entrepreneur, being a business owner. You think it's all like, especially when you read books or look at social, it kind of gets all labeled the same thing. Mm-hmm. And when you were younger, I've seen a lot of people fall into this trap. It's like you get obsessed with doing entrepreneurial things, but you're not an entrepreneur. And a true entrepreneur in my eyes, is somebody that solves problems that eventually those problems are sorted without you even needing to be in the vicinity or in that space. And that's where what you're touching on is like, if you're the person that likes to make pies and you're trying to open up high business, like then you're going to need a business partner that is more of the entrepreneur rather than the person that's making the pies. Cause at that point you're just like the head baker, I guess is what you call it. Co-founder and head baker. And that's something that I did not know when I was getting into it before we tuned in here today. I was telling Jesse how, like, cause he was looking at the books here in my studio and I was reading all of them because like, I thought I wanted to be the CEO of like a 50 person company and like build something up and scale it and sell it. And then I realized really quickly, like the toll that that would take, like, cause I mean, you could try and build a company without putting in tons of hours and energy and money. But the reality is like most times, if you're looking to scale something, I guess it's going to take all of you and more. And I took a step back and tried to understand more of how do I build something that's sustainable over the long run for my lifestyle, my family, and it is fun. And it seems like just from talking to you that you've kind of been able to have an energy that balances all of those things. And I know that only comes with like falling off cliffs and then understanding what that feels like. Was there anything that has happened in your business that almost broke the business and made you want to quit specifically?
I mean, it's sort of contrived, like obvious, just because like our business in the food industry was really impacted during COVID. Mm-hmm. And we had like in 2017, 2018 made this pivot. We started testing and tinkering. We were doing like these test farmers markets for burgers and getting like 50 person lines once a week. And like people were really crushing it. We did a Kickstarter, turned our hot dog truck into a burger truck. So we were like, things were all going in the right direction. We signed our first lease in 2019, getting ready to finally open our restaurant, which had been like the dream from day one. It was like brick and mortar, fast casual, getting into this whole world. The Nats had just won the World Series, which is relevant because our first location is like half a block from Nationals Ballpark in Washington, D.C. So like we felt like we were on top of the world. Like it's finally working. Everything's great. We're supposed to open in spring 2020. We're building out our first restaurant. The whole world shuts down. So like that was a really hard pill to swallow because like patience is something that I think a lot of people have issues with. Speaking for myself, I know I want things. I have the idea. You know, you think you've got it mapped out, but it all just takes longer than you want it to sometimes. And I think for us, still persevering and like figuring out how we could get scrappy and like build a lot of the stuff in our restaurant to save money and getting it open in November 2020. Like I was the GM for our first restaurant for 6 months and they're 70, 80, 90 hours a week sometimes because we didn't have all the systems. We didn't have the cash to hire all the people we wanted. So like that's what I was doing. And Ben did a bunch of stints of like having to hop in and GM for months at a time at different points that first year and a half. So I think that was the hardest thing because our expectations were like, we got through that part already. We did the food truck. We did the hustle. We did the grind. We're building a team. We have employees. And then all of a sudden it's like the universe just kind of smacked us in the face. We're like, well, beginner's mindset, here it is, your opportunity. You're going to start over from the bottom. I have to build this business basically all over again. Like we had this kind of pretty large food truck team at the time. I think 95% of them decided they all wanted to kind of like move or be with family or just take unemployment, take some time off. They didn't want to be on the metro commuting when there's, you know, a lot of things going on around COVID, not a lot of uncertainty. We had one guy on our team who stuck with us. And it was Ben, myself, and one of our managers back on the food trucks trying to like get him hours and figure out how we can make this work. It's like that was a very humbling experience and definitely the closest I think we came just being like, might be all over. You know, this has been fun. Maybe we have to go get those jobs after all. But it's so funny, like that darkest moment, excuse me, that darkest moment is what led us into finding this opportunity around doing like frozen french fries, and like seeing this other business opportunity, because we were forced to try to figure out how do we streamline, how do we do something different with our processes. And it led us to like creating this french fry factory in our food truck kitchen because that business has gone away and now we're making fries for ourselves and they're doing really well. And we're realizing there's this huge opportunity in the grocery store because it's the same brands like Ore-Ida and all these people for the last 20 years with no innovation. And we've been, you know, scrubbing out fryers for, you know, 5 years and listening to podcasts and hearing about these amazing, innovative challenger brands in CPG and the sea of sameness they would see and then come up with this great idea and change the whole category. And we walk down the aisle, we're like, holy shit, like we found it. There's a thing right here in front of us that we could do that's this really big opportunity. So that kind of led us into this whole world that's like becoming a really big part of our business. But we would never have stopped the momentum we had on the restaurant side had we not gotten punched in the face and thought the whole business was going to go to zero in 2020.
a lot to unpack there and a few different ways that I could go. One, I love fries. Like, I don't think I've ever said that on a podcast. I don't know why I would ever have a need to say that I love fries.
Hopefully we can talk about it more.
Yeah, sweet potato fries in particular. They've always been something. We literally have a ninja fryer here that we make our own fries, as well as like there's these like Costco sweet potato fries. So my wife and I both love those. And then back in the day, man, Chick-fil-A waffle fries, love them. So anybody that's like tackling a market that is kind of fun and something that all of us have probably eaten fries for our entire life. It's something that is exciting and you're going after something that I think when you talked about walking down the aisles and seeing the opportunity, that just goes to show how experience matters and time matters. And when you're in it, when you're in the thick of it, like in the food truck and cleaning the fryers and listening to the podcast, you can't always see where is this going to lead. And then you have that aha moment. And I'm specifically speaking to this, to the person that is considering an idea, because right now you just don't know where it's going to take you 5, 10, 15 years down the road. But you do know if you don't act on it, you know where you're going to be in the same fucking spot that you are right now. And I always want to encourage people to just go down that path, just like you did with the food truck. Like, screw it. We have this idea. We have the time. We're young. Let's see what happens. And even if you have kids or you're married and you don't have as much time now, like there's ways to find little areas for you to start something and just see where that thread goes. And you'd mentioned something earlier on the podcast that you're like 9 years in and you finally feel like you have your feet under you. What has given you that feeling? Because I think we all have this fictitious expectation that if I make $1 million, then my feet are going to be under me. Or if I get the girl, my feet are going to be under me. If I get XYZ, my feet are going to be under me. But the reality is it can look a million different ways when we're talking about brands and businesses and just our personal fulfillment. So for you, Jesse, and for the business, what is that visually or contextually? What gives you that feeling of your feet finally feel like they're underneath you?
Yeah, a lot of it's the benefit of experience. Like the things that would rattle you and really shake your cage 4 or 5 years ago, that same thing can happen once you've seen it and seen it all worked out, where you're like, oh, hello, old friend. Like, this is going to be fine. Like, we'll figure it out.
So like innate confidence.
Yeah. So some of it's confidence in knowing you have the resources. Even if you don't know the answer, you have the resources to figure it out. You've got the people, you've got the team, you've got the connections, you've got the contacts. Or yeah, you have the confidence of like, we built out our restaurant. When something breaks, now it's like, okay, I can YouTube this and figure out at least half of it. And then I can call the handyman or the electrician or the plumber and they can come get it. And worst case scenario, we shut down for half of a day and we get it fixed and whatever. Like, the first time that happens, it's so scary. You're like, the world is ending. There's water raining down from the ceiling. I don't know what the fuck to do with this. And that literally has happened at a restaurant because we took over an old restaurant and the piping is not great. So you learn like things along the way. But I think also the confidence you were mentioning, like why it feels like our feet are under us, we're really seeing these opportunities right now. It goes back to that testing and iterating. When we first saw this fry opportunity, it wasn't like, boom, walk the aisles. Now let's go raise $1 million and go and try to launch this thing because there's this huge opportunity and we're going to miss the wave. It was, oh, that's interesting. What can we do to test it right now with as little money as possible? We mocked up a brand design on Canva, slapped it on a bag, got into a couple of small grocery stores, hand-delivered stuff, got feedback from people, started to like, you know, see what would happen. And once we did that, then opportunities came knocking and we were ready for them, where a distributor was interested coming to our kitchen and kind of talking to other brands. And they were like, hey, do you want us to want a pitch? We're like, okay, sure. We'll throw it together in 24 hours, talk to them. And then we saw the reaction from them. They're like, wow, we haven't seen anything new in fries. And we're like, yeah, I know, right? Like, we haven't seen it either. It's crazy. And they were like, all right, we're going to launch in 3 regions and we'll see what happens. And we got into 180 accounts in the first 6 months from the side project thing we just threw out there and see what happens. At that point, we're like, oh, we should take this a little bit more seriously. We've not really done anything other than just put the product out there and make it when we get an order. We applied to get in Sprouts Farmers Market through their category review, cold email, no warm introduction, They're excited about it. We send them a bag. They look at it. Wow, this is cool. Send them a sample. They taste it. Wow, this is great. Then we get into 120 stores with Sprouts on the West Coast, which in retrospect, being in two places all the way across the country, not a great idea. People told us that. And we're like, oh, no, it's going to be fine. So like having mentors and good advice, if you don't take it, sometimes you need to learn those lessons the hard way still. So we grew this kind of like test brand just to see what would happen, up to 470 stores, some really big natural chains. And that's where like, okay, we didn't do this right. It's not really a good fit to do this within our restaurant business. It's complicated. It's creating these added costs. Like we don't have the infrastructure, but we've really validated there's an opportunity here. And then at the same time, we're still working and tinkering and trying to make our restaurant as good as we can be. We're adding things to the menu. We're taking things off the menu. And that's working really well. So I think where we're at today, why we feel we're so confident where we're going is because we've got a restaurant that's working. We've got these stadium locations that are, you know, adding more brand awareness and helping people learn about us. We got this fry business that we did fundraising for, and we're getting ready to launch in some really great retailers and starting to grow and sell fries to other restaurants, help them solve the same problems we were trying to solve for ourselves. So it just feels like we sort of know what the next 6, 9, 12 months looks like. We're not grasping at things and trying to find the next thing and make things happen. It's no, we actually like are saying no to things now. We know what the right opportunities are. I think that's such a luxury, and it's still other, it's a problem to have like more money, more problems, right? Or like more opportunities, more problems. It's weird to finally get to that space you hear people talk about where it's all about focus. Because early on, it wasn't about focus. It was say yes to everything, show up at everything, do everything we can to get our name out there and try to have things happen. And small scale, like for food trucks, you get events. We say yes to every event. Then you learn like, we're only gonna do events if there's a minimum guarantee. We're only gonna do events if it's this type of thing that we know has worked in the past. For this, where we're at now today, it's like we get a retailer or like a real estate partner. It's like, oh, we wanna open a Swizzler here. We don't need to say yes. If they want to throw us an incredible deal and they want to build it for us or make it like this, it's a perfect opportunity. Sure, we could do it. But you're such a different like headspace and just in a different place when you can just say, oh, we don't need to do that. That's not in the plan. We've got a plan. We're going to be fine either way. But still being flexible and adaptable enough where if something amazing comes up, we know we've been there before. We've been able to like, you know, put our foot on the pedal and figure it out. So we're willing to kind of just be patient, do the things we need to be doing right now, go after these opportunities that we see that are really exciting, and then just sort of wait and see like what the universe has in store for us. If a great contact, a great connection, a great opportunity comes up, we know we have the skill set and we have the tenacity and we have the resilience that like we can go after that other thing too, or find a way to, you know, make a good decision and go after it then.
The power of no.
It's really powerful. Yeah, yeah.
It's one of the major struggles of businesses and entrepreneurs in general is because you do have to flip that switch on. When you first start out, you got to be saying yes to everything.
Yep.
And then it just reminds me of like being a kid, being an adolescent, being an adult. Like businesses are the same way. When you're a kid, it's just like play four sports, run around, try all the different things. And then eventually you start realizing like, okay, I don't love this thing as much as I love this thing. So I need to like spend more time focusing on this thing. And then eventually it's like, now I have to decide between two things I love. And I think that's the biggest thing that most businesses and entrepreneurs struggle with, including myself, is like, man, like I love the podcast. I love to YouTube. I love to do community events. I love to travel. I love to do athletic things. I love to cook, eat, talk entrepreneurship. I love to do all these different things, but I can't do all of them.
You can not well.
Yeah. You can't do all of them well. And to grow anything and to master anything, it takes focus, and it just hits so home with myself and some of the other conversations I've had recently with other people. How do you go about deciding like what to say yes or no to? Because it's easy in theory to sit here and just say, yeah, we're saying no to more things, but how do you even decide? Like what dictates whether Jesse says yes to something or not?
I think part of it, at least this is only speaking for myself, I don't know everyone's perspective, but part of wanting to say yes to everything is some sort of like inner emotional thing too. It's like somewhat people pleasing. You feel like if you don't take this opportunity now, it's never going to be there. I'm going to miss out. You know, you have like, there's a lot of emotion that comes with it. And I think just being confident of where you're at and then realizing that if I say no, that's not saying never. And you can still leave that door open. So there's a big difference there. And I think also in business generally, we try to keep business as human as possible. I always try to have relationships with people. We try to work with our vendors. Everybody have a great relationship as much as we possibly can. But also having the ability to separate the human and the business and say, we actually know from a business perspective, we're in a way better negotiating standpoint when our default answer is no. Because you're in a way different space.
You're more attractive.
It's like being at the bar thing, right? Yep. It's like if your default is no and someone's trying to convince you to do the thing, you're going to get a way different deal than when you're the one knocking on the door and needing something from them. And again, like it's a privileged place to be in business where you're able to know that if nothing changes, you're still going to be good. And I think that's also part of it is understanding what success looks like. And I think you were mentioning this earlier. It's like knowing what you want your lifestyle to be and what success is going to look like. Not everyone's success is like a $500 million exit. Or maybe it is for some people, but it doesn't mean it has to happen in the next 3 years or 5 years. It could be 20 years from now. And so long as you're trying to run your business in a way it's sustainable, you know, you can be doing things that you get genuine enjoyment out of. You feel like you're adding value. You feel like you have a purpose. You feel like you're adding value to the community. You're giving people something that's great. And you really stand behind it. Like, we're fine for the next 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. When you bring in outside parties, investors with expectations, that does complicate things, right? Because they're coming in with their own expectation. Then they're saying, oh, I put this $1 in. I want to get $10 out. So you have to be able to manage those pieces of it and understand what you're signing up for. And I think sometimes people see the social media post, they see the article and they're like, oh, this VC-backed thing, that's the way to do it. That's how I should do it. And then they bring in this venture capital firm. They have this great idea. It's awesome. But did you know what ride you just signed up for? Because the best analogy I've heard is like VC money, that kind of like going down that path is rocket fuel. And like you could have the fastest car, you could have the best Ferrari in the world that wants to race super fast and have this great experience. It's not going to run very well on rocket fuel. Rocket fuel is for a rocket. And if you're not ready to sign up for that trajectory of like the answer is you want to be at 100 or you want to be at zero, it might not be the path for you. And I think being able to be confident in what you're doing, knowing what outcome you want, and being willing to be like, we've got a great little business and that's fine by us. We don't need to be on the cover of Forbes with this multi-billion dollar exit, that's okay. It puts you in this position where now you can be not on the defensive, but you're also not constantly on the offensive trying to find things. You just sort of let things play out. You be patient. You wait for great opportunities. And I think especially if you're nurturing relationships that are authentic and genuine and people know that you're coming from a great place, those things are going to come in down the road. And by having less on your plate, you're going to be better equipped to go and pounce on the thing that's a hell yes, rather than just saying yes to everything. And now you have no bandwidth to do the thing you're really excited about.
The best thing I think you said there is how you try to keep things as human as possible. I think too many people lose sight of that statement right there. And when we think of business and human psychology, when you're talking about somebody who understands themselves, you can feel that in a room. So we just were at a retreat with 30 plus people. And the beauty of the thing we were just at is like, you could tell everyone's like confident at their own skin. This was a curated thing where everyone is confident in their own skin at this particular event. And that feeling is something that the people next to you, that's a vibe. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing in business. It's like people can tell whether you're desperate or not just from the vibe that you're putting off. And when you're confident in who you are and where you want to go, you're more attractive to new opportunities. And that's the tough thing in the beginning of business when you're like a young hustler entrepreneur where you're trying to open yourself up to all these opportunities, but you don't even know who you are as a person. And that's the tough thing. So my recommendation is for people out there, like when you're focusing on growing your business, don't just focus on growing your business, focus on growing yourself. Because if you're focused on growing yourself, and that's why I like read all these books, listen to all these podcasts, I was more reflecting on like, who do I need to become to understand what do I even want out of business?
Yep.
Most people just hear business or entrepreneurship and are like, that's for me, or I hate my job, so I'm going to become an entrepreneur. When the reality is there's so much nuance to all of it. And that's where I'd love to kind of pivot this conversation into the nuance of the food that you're actually creating in the first place. So we were mentioning like grass-fed, grass-finished, like the sourcing, the things that maybe in the beginning you weren't fully understanding, but the person you wanted to become was somebody that wanted to understand these things. And I'd love to educate my listeners on what does it mean to source high quality foods, like what goes into it, and what is your goal personally and the business's goal when it comes to that, not just now, but growing over the next 5 and 10 years.
So I think one thing that I want to say up front that I think is really important and sometimes gets skipped over, especially in like the Instagram reel that gets a million likes and is saying, if you have seed oils, it's going to kill you, right? It's like so polarizing, is that we very firmly believe that like progress is better than perfection. And you don't need to do every single thing at once. You can't. We've tried to do it in some ways and we've had to dial things back and say, what's the most important thing that we can do right now that we're proud of and excited about? And then let's still like have a plan that we're internally committed to because we feel like it's important and we're going to improve over time. So like one thing we talked about, the hot dogs. We shipped a pallet of hot dogs that we wanted to get grass-fed, grass-finished across the country when it made no sense because we felt like it was the right thing to do. What that became is we learned about grass-fed, grass-finished and 100% grass-fed. So what this means, especially for listeners that aren't like operating food businesses, because you go to the grocery store, everyone eats. If you're buying or you're shopping somewhere, it says grass-fed, grass-fed meat, grass-fed tallow, whatever it is. Unfortunately, that doesn't mean anything. And that's, I think, what's really scary about the food industry and shopping and grocery and marketing around this stuff is this concept of greenwashing. If everyone doesn't know greenwashing, it's just this idea of like big companies understand that people want better food and they can market it as better even if they're not actually doing the thing that is implied by it. There's really complicated USDA guidelines for these things where there's definitions and you can skate by the definition really closely. So if I could say, oh, it's grass-fed beef, it's because like technically every cow when it's born, like the way the food system works with beef is like there's a cow-calf operation where the cows are born there and the moms and the calves are there. They're eating grass when they're first born. Like that's just how cows, I mean, I guess milk and then grass. That's where they're living their life. So technically every cow is grass-fed. What grass-finished means, it means their entire life they're living on grass. So it's essentially like pasture-raised. Like it's meant to be a farm-like experience you see on the packages or on the wall at the restaurant trying to give you this experience of like, oh, we're buying it from the farm. And sometimes it's true, but it's not. There's also a lot of like weird nuance, unfortunately, of like technically I think you can feed cows that are in a concentrated feedlot like you've seen like the horrible documentaries. You could feed them alfalfa pellets and technically it's considered grass-finished, which is like a whole other thing. But grass-fed, grass-finished is really important to us is kind of how we got into this. And then we learned that there's like another level up from that, which is regenerative. With a regenerative agriculture, what it's about is like creating this holistic farming system that is trying to regenerate the soil. It's about soil health. And the idea is if you can make healthier soil, you're adding more nutrients in, then you're having cows presumably eating that grass and in a more nutrient-dense environment, they're going to be living a healthier life. They're, you know, it's not about what you eat always. Sometimes it's what you eat ate, which I think is really important. So you've regenerative agriculture. You've got these cows that are living in this system where they're actually helping improve what we're living in. They're helping improve the world. Like we've been to some of these farm tours and seen photos and things where you go to one side of the street and there's some other farm and it looks like a desert. You go to the other side of the street, it's lush pastures. There's bugs, there's worms, there's birds, there's deer, there's pigs, there's all this stuff there. And all the only thing that got changed is how the farmer was managing the land. And what they're basically just trying to do is like use evolutionary principles. It's like mimicking when a herd of buffalo was walking across the United States, you know, 1,000 years ago, they were getting hunted by predators. So they'd kind of move as a herd all in a big pack. They'd constantly be moving. And because of that, they're defecating and they're stamping this stuff into the ground. It's bringing all this fertilizer into the ground. It's creating this really lush environment, but they're moving. They're not sitting there and eating every inch of grass. So in regenerative agriculture, they use animals, cows usually, as a tool to help grow a healthier soil and create a better environment. So they move them from one paddock, they call it to like take a big plot of land and kind of divide it up with fencing. And they'll move them every day or every couple of days so that they're eating just the right amount of grass where they're getting really great nutrition. They're not, you know, damaging the soil and they kind of move around. So there's ways that you can incorporate techniques into agriculture that leads to a healthier, better outcome for the soil, a healthier, better outcome for the cows and a happier, more like normal life for the entire time they live and a better outcome for humans because you're eating food the way that it's supposed to be eaten and they lived a normal lifestyle. So it's a sort of like amazing cycle that goes out there. And for us, like when we learned about this, I think in 2019, we worked with Joyce Farms down the North Carolina, Georgia area. They're an amazing farm. We visited it. We've met the team. And they care so much about, it has to taste great, but also how is it being raised? What did it eat? So it's like bringing a lot together to create an experience where the food tastes amazing. It tastes even better than the other stuff that's out there. It's really craveable and addictive, but it also leaves you feeling better after and more energized. So I think for someone who's trying to think about what they're putting in their body, they're shopping at the grocery store, there's a lot of nuance. Like we focus a lot on beef, but if you're thinking in the beef world, regenerative grass-fed beef is a really amazing thing. Generally, it's always going to be better than anything else. The best thing you can do is learn about the actual farm. Like White Oak Pastures is an amazing brand. Force of Nature is an amazing brand. Joyce Farms is an amazing brand. So they're building more of that credibility on the brand name to make it easier for shoppers to know what they're getting. But you can also find a local farm. You might meet them, and they're doing an amazing job at the farmer's market, and they're raising their cows. They're not giving them antibiotics and hormones, and they're raising them in a normal life. That's going to be your best source. And then, you know, there's a lot of other controversy around, well, grain finish tastes better because there's more marbling in the steak. Like I've had amazing steaks from White Oak Pastures from these places. Like they're really fatty. They're really delicious. They're better for the cows. They're better for me and they're better for the planet. So I opt to try to do that as much as I can and invest in that. But again, progress is better than perfection. If you can, you know, just do grass-fed, grass-finished, you see 100% grass-fed, that's way better than just grass-fed or something that doesn't say anything and it's a little bit cheaper. And then, you know, there's a lot of these same ideas in produce and chicken and all this different stuff. That's unfortunately the greenwashing thing isn't going to go away because these giant companies are incentivized to get that premium and they're incentivized to try to give customers what they want. But my hope, and I think our hope with our business, is the more we can educate people about how they feel when they eat good food, not just like morally, because it does feel better that way too, but just genuinely how their body feels, and we can create more demand, we can shift the supply. And that's why we wanted to go after fast food with our first concept, was like the most demand is for fast food in the country. And you were like you were saying, there's statistics. I think the last one I saw, it's like 80% of Americans eat fast food like once a week or something like that. And there's crazy stats, especially we talk about like kids and all of that. But it's like if we can move the needle a little bit in what fast food looks like, that's genuinely going to give people like us a better opportunity to incentivize farmers to do things a better way because they're working so hard. You think restaurants are hard? Try running a farm, right?
Yeah.
Like they're getting cents on the dollar compared to what, you know, we're paying at the end of the day. So they need a reason to invest and change and try to do things a better way. And consumers demanding better products that are better for them and their families and being willing to pay a slight premium incentivizes the farmers to change, you know, the kind of way they've always done things. Their granddaddy's granddaddy raised their cows, right? Because they didn't know any better. They can make those changes and help us create a better system for everybody.
It's a very complex problem that when you start talking about it, you start realizing that it's not an easy fix. And I think it's easy to be the person on social media being like, our system, and this used to be me, so I'm allowed to say this because it was me, like, our healthcare system's so fucked up, big pharma is so fucked up, food and agriculture is so fucked up. But the reality is, it is a huge system that they're all connected, and sitting on a high horse and just yelling about it is not going to do anything. And it takes, to your point, us understanding the full problem, the education. That's why I love podcasts like this, because like somebody is going to listen to this that has never thought about this problem at all, most likely. And then to your point of the greenwashing, that's going to be an enlightening thing for people out there, which leads me to think like, how does somebody understand what they're actually getting? Is there any way to actually do that?
The best way is like shake your farmer's hand as much as you possibly can, which I know is hard, especially, you know, for people with busy lives. It's easier to order delivery groceries. It's easier to get fast food and DoorDash and Uber Eats. You know, there's also some great restaurant brands that try to make it easier by building a trustworthy reputation. They're sourcing this food in, which is, you know, somewhat better. The problem, and I think it lends itself to the conversation about seed oils, is that some of these systemic things are so costly to make a better change. And because us collectively as consumers, we don't understand it or like put a value on it, there's not a good incentive for a restaurant to make a change. They're not going to get credit for the consumer. And they're just going to say, oh, this is, why is this more expensive? This is bullshit, right? And like, this place sucks. And if you do that, like, you know, these places have investors, they have shareholders, a lot of things. There's like a lot of complexity to your point about all of this. I think, yeah, meeting your farmer, going to the local farmer's market, finding a great grocery store. Like, we have one near us called Mom's Organic Market. They're amazing. Have such a great selection of like more conventional, regular products, but also tons of awesome, really great stuff. I buy White Oak Pastures meat there, from like Grayson Natural Meats. It's like a Virginia farm that has stuff there. Go to the farmer's market, buy meat there.
I think we just need to make farming cool again type of campaign.
It's starting to get there, which is awesome. Yeah. I mean, there's been great documentaries like Common Ground recently came out, a new documentary. Kiss the Ground was the first one. I think it's on Netflix. So one thing that's nice, like, I think it's amazing podcast. I love podcasts listening to them. And to your point, like, I hope there's one, two, three people, whatever it is, who haven't thought of these things. It just gives them enough of like a, huh, that's interesting. Maybe that guy's full of shit. Let me go and figure it out on my own. And like, go find the Netflix documentaries, go find these things, Google and stuff. Unfortunately, there's a lot of other things online and in documentary film where people have biases and stuff. So like, you got to kind of like learn on your own. And I'm not here to convince people one way or another. We like, my personal belief is meat has been around for a very long time, red meat in particular, and that there's ways that we can use cows to actually create a healthier planet, to have more sustainability, to put out more nutritious food that's better for people to eat. You can be thoughtful around your consumption, around portioning and all that kind of stuff. But if you generally just live a life where you're trying to eat less processed food and more stuff that's simple ingredients, and you learn about and find brands and people that you can believe in, I think for us, while we're trying to start this new Fry thing and we're calling it Jesse and Ben's for our names, is like, we want to be a brand that people can trust me, they can trust Ben, they like, we're doing this in a way that's going to be food that we want to feed our family, CJ's family, and we're excited about. And like, I think so many things get demonized. I was having a great conversation about this week. It's like, French fries, people think so unhealthy, right? But at the end of the day, it's a potato and it's cooked, fried, you know, blanched in water or oil, and it's cooked and it's given like salt. Is that a bad food? Potatoes aren't unhealthy. People have had potatoes for a long time.
This is the funny thing, because for a French fry, it could literally be, normally it's like one or two ingredients, right? Like, I make my own fries. Like, if you want to put some avocado oil on there, olive oil, whatever, like, okay, maybe you have two ingredients when I put it in my fryer.
And that's what we're trying to do. So our new brand's going to be literally avocado oil, potatoes, salt. Maybe get crazy, throw some rosemary and garlic in there, but it's five ingredients at most. We're doing a line where it's going to be grass-fed tallow, potatoes, Redmond's real salt.
Yeah, like, Redmond's.
Great, love that brand. I go through a lot of Redmond at my house. But like, that's like more of a health food, right? Like, it's not a bad food. What's bad is McDonald's having 19 ingredients in their fries. It's like, that doesn't make any sense. Why are there five types of hydrogenated oil in there? Why are they still using a chemical to make it taste like it's made in tallow, so it's consistent with what it was done 20 years ago when they actually cooked it in tallow? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So I think it's like, trying to find brands and products. I think we're so lucky to live in a world where there's a lot of people who are not just looking at dollars and cents business opportunities, they're also just passionate about solving these things. And they're going out, they're sourcing from great producers, they're doing things like regenerative sourcing.
This is where I was coming off a little negative on social media earlier on this, just because of, again, the polarity of different things. But the beauty of social media is the ability to have people understand exactly what you just said, that like, more people than ever understand, one, that what we put in our body actually matters.
Yep.
That's the very first ground level foundational step to changing the world, is just like, people in our age demographic know that what we eat matters. Now, whether they start changing and doing different habits, that's really up to us and up to how we're going about like educating and making it worthwhile.
It's about making it easy too. I think that the problem I always had.
Frictionless.
Yeah, it's frictionless. And I think sometimes it's frictionless is like the function of like, is it easy to make in 5 minutes? Mm. Is it as easy as the other thing I could buy that's not good for me? Everyone's busy. You've kids, you've got stuff going on, all these things. The other piece of it though is like why we're excited about something like French fries. It's not just trying to make the food that sucks and tastes bad. It's like, how can I make something actually taste better? It's something I'm actually craveable. Yeah. It's actually really great. And using that as the entry point to convince someone to give it a try. And I think once people have that aha moment of like, I tried this thing, I paid a little bit more for it, it actually tastes better and I feel better after, and I know the story and I feel better about that too. Where else can I apply this principle in my life and substitute one or two things out? It could be the soap you use in your house. It could be, you know, the types of thing you're putting in your body. It could be all sorts of stuff. But I think to your point, like, we're finally at the point where, like, it's entering the world's consciousness of, like, we all kind of know there's a problem and we all kind of know there's starting to become some solutions about it. But until you experience it in the most frictionless way and have that moment of, like, oh, I get it now, then you start, like, taking that pill and going down the rabbit hole of, like, okay, maybe I will go check out that farmer's market that my cousin was telling me about that I've been meaning to but haven't actually done it. It's like taking that action step, but, like, working backwards to making it really easy to get someone just taking the first step down the path. And I think one thing that's amazing about things like regenerative agriculture, things like removing seed oils from your diet, things like sourcing better meat, is that it actually tastes better and you actually feel better and it's actually better for the planet. It's not like, and nothing against keto and some of these other things, like, they're very extreme and they make you feel, and you're making trade-offs. Other than potentially the cost, there's no trade-off to these things. And I think when you really think about the cost, for better or worse, like, healthcare is really expensive. And if you're living your life and you're sick and you're miserable, like, not even just the cost of living a miserable life, you should be living an amazing life, you'd be thriving. But, like, just dollars and cents, you're going to pay for it either way, either in your grocery cart now and you're paying a little bit more to feel healthier and live a better life, or later if you're, like, fat and sick or, you know, having disease, you're going to pay for it at some point.
I've said it here on the podcast before, that you got to understand the difference between price and cost.
Yes.
And the
value.
Yeah, the upfront price of organic food or healthier food is going to be more, but over the long run, it's the cost is going to be less because, I mean, I did the math on this. If you let's say for 25 years, you get organic food, you're probably going to pay like $30,000 to $50,000 more in food over that time frame. But the reality is, like, if you save yourself from a heart attack, if you save yourself from cancer and you extend your life, I mean, what's a year worth to you? Even just a year, what's a month worth? Like, to me, I mean, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars to get extra months of life. I would love to have, especially if you're somebody that has kids, right? And your kids are growing up and you want to see them achieve the things that they want to achieve in their life. There's no price that you can put to that, right? So when you think of it like that, and then of course there has to be within reason, like, don't go broke. That's why I think it's important what you're talking about, where, again, like, progress, like, think of two or three things in your household that you can maybe swap out and really work towards understanding, because education and information, like, I mean, if you have a cell phone, it's free nowadays. Like, get on the internet, pay for that internet, go on Google, ChatGPT, social media, start learning. And then something you did mention that I want more people to do as well is, like, look at contradicting things. So mm-hmm. when you go to documentaries, like, watch both. Like, that's the thing that I think I've strived to do over the course of my life is, like, watch pro-vegan things, watch pro-meat things, watch pro-farmer things, watch all of it. And then make a decision for yourself, because I think that's what we need most in today's world.
Definitely.
Out of everything, is just take a step back and observe and analyze and be willing to make a decision on your own and be able to confidently back that decision up. I think that's something that's lacking.
Yeah, I think the one thing too that's nice about the food industry generally is that everybody eats. There's a lot of things in the world where people disagree on, but, like, you can bring people to a table around really good food and everyone can, like, have a shared experience around that, enjoy it. So I think it's nice that, like, it maybe is a way that we can start creating that dialogue. And one thing I also wanted to say to what we were talking about a couple minutes ago is it probably isn't applying to most people that are listeners to this podcast, but it's worth saying, is that it's maybe 10% or 20% of the US population is truly able to have full flexibility with their spending. They can kind of buy whatever they want. There's a lot of people that are living paycheck to paycheck. They're feeding a family of five kids. I was having a conversation about this last weekend. And, like, if you're have food stamps and you're, like, trying to, like, survive and get by, like, you don't have the luxury of even choosing Cheerios over the value brand, let alone buying, like, the really great regeneratively farmed thing, which, like, I think having some, like, empathy and compassion around that's really important. But also understanding that as a consumer, if you do have that buying power, that, like, you can actually make an impact just by supporting the brands and the people. And not saying it's just us, there's plenty of other examples out there, but these brands that are more premium products now, if they're genuinely invested in doing it the right way, all of them have the goal of trying to use the strategy of like, if we get big enough, we can bring the cost down and touch more people. Like generally, I think that's the strategy of like, you have a premium thing because it costs more to make it. But as we make some of this impact, we can make it trickle down and have more people have access to it. So by voting with your dollar on brands, on farms, on grocery stores, on things that like align with your values, you're actually helping. Maybe it's going to take a few years or 5 years or 10 years, but you're helping other people that right now can't afford that or have the luxury of it, get better access to these foods too, which I think is like hugely impactful and ultimately how we can make a big change, because we don't want to have 10 or 20% of the population thriving and everyone else just like getting by with what Kellogg and General Mills and Unilever put in front of them. It'd be nice that like we can all have this shared experience around deserving to eat really great food, have farmers have a great lifestyle, have people that are working really hard, be able to live to their 80s and 90s and hundreds and see their grandkids grow up and have all these amazing experiences. And like, it's a simple thing that I don't think we think about, but your dollar is your vote around food. And when you make a lazy decision, there's more impact to it than just, I felt bad and have a food hangover the next day because I ate that thing I wasn't supposed to.
What an amazing point. And we're going to wrap up there and get into our last couple of questions. The last thing I have to say on that is the thing that comes to mind when you mentioned that is, how do we vote with our dollar enough where we're integrating better foods into our school system, into our hospital systems, into the big systems? That's what eventually it'll get to, is your, when you vote with your dollar and you have a higher standard for yourself, it's just like, I have a family now. The higher I hold myself, my kids are going to follow suit with that. And then my community is going to follow suit. And then that's when you have a chance to really make an impact, is like, impact your home first, like make those decisions, vote with your dollar, and then it's going to bleed and ripple into ways that you just can't even see yet. The more all of us do that, the better the outcome is going to be. So love this conversation, Jesse. We could sit here and talk for another hour. Always love when that's the case. Last two things that I always run into is, first is, for people that were listening here today, how do they get in contact with you? And then also, if there's somebody out there that you're looking to get in contact with or partner with, I know you're doing a raise right now, like, what would the best win look like after wrapping up this conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question, and I appreciate that you try to create this kind of container to allow that too, because I'm sure there's amazing people listening to this. For contact me, I'm really easy to find. Most of my social personal stuff is at Jesse_Koenig, just my name. Or, you know, you can find Swizzler Foods as our restaurant brand. Jesse and Ben's is going to be sort of like launching officially soon, so you'll find that easily as well. My email address is jesse@jesseandbens.com or jesse@swizzlerfoods.com. I'm easy to find. And you know, I'm not always the like fastest responder, but I always try to get back to everybody. So even if you just like want to chat or are curious, I'm happy to talk to anybody. It's great. In terms of ways people can help, I think for us, like if you're in DC, we'd love to have you come to the restaurant, try it out. It's amazing. It's like our favorite thing to do. Because our fry business is our newer business, I think for us, we want to do what you're saying, is like go and impact schools, impact like hospitals, cafeterias, all this stuff. And we feel like French fries, oddly enough, is like a weird entry point into doing that and like getting the distribution and stuff, and then finding other ways to turn junk food into joy food is sort of what we're trying to do. So if people have, you know, a restaurant, or they have friends who have a restaurant, or family member has a restaurant and they want an amazing hand-cut fry, we do a conventional version because we know restaurants have thin margins, so it's just better tasting. Or if they want a seed oil free fry, reach out to us. If you're a grocer, if you know a great retailer, if you have a grocery store near you that like you would love to have them have this product there, let us know or get us in touch, or you know, go ask the manager what to do. Like anything that people want to contribute to the cause, our goal is to make an impact on the food industry, on people's health in a positive way over the next 20, 30, 40 years. I think that's what I'm on the planet to do. And I'd love to connect to anybody who aligns with that. If they have an idea, if they have a thought, if they want to invest, whatever it is, I'm really easy to find and would love to talk to anybody.
Heck yeah. Reach out to Jesse if that is you. Last question I always ask everybody is, if you were to define the word thriving, what does it mean to you?
Yeah, I think it's different for everybody. I mean, I think what I've come to learn, and it's something I'm repeatedly teaching myself, is that we choose to be happy, like a lot. And I think it goes back to the earlier part of our conversation, right? It's like the same things that might rattle you and make your day horrible, once you kind of have, you're equipped with the confidence and the skill set to handle it, like that doesn't ruin your day as much. I think for me, thriving is trying to show up as my best self, trying to be staying in the present moment, trying to do the things that bring me joy and interact with people that, you know, I think have aligned values, and finding ways I can be of service. So I think thriving is just all about how I show up. And a lot of that is stuff I'm still working on, and make sure I can do that consistently day in, day out. But it's a more of a state of being. It's like, it's just about doing your best, having a little bit of compassion and grace for yourself, and not taking it, not being too hard on yourself. Cause I know a lot of us, speaking for myself, I'm sure many others, it's easy to beat yourself up for the little things, but be patient, be long-term focused, you know, just focus on having the best days one after another. And that's thriving. And I think everything else will sort of work out.
Hell yeah. Well, I appreciate your time here today. It's been awesome to get to know you a little bit more, and I look forward to seeing your Fry journey and all the positive impact that y'all get to have. And one thing I always do at the end of every podcast is kind of reflect back and think, like, what is the kind of the big lesson that I took away? And you said something in the very beginning that I think, no matter if you're somebody that's already built a really big business, or if you're just getting started, or no matter what walk of life you're on, we can all use a little bit more of this. And that's where you were talking about, like, being curious and not being afraid to look stupid. I think those two things get so lost in today's world, especially the not being afraid to look stupid. That little statement holds so many people back from achieving their dreams, or even just doing the thing that would make them feel more alive, that would make them thrive on life. It's such a simple statement that you said here today that I don't think anyone's ever said those exact words. So
I think it's also the people that are going to judge you are not the people that you should even think about for 1 second. So, like, you feeling stupid or feeling judgment is going to be from the person that they should have no space in your brain. They don't matter. So, like, the other people are going to be thinking about themselves, being like, wow, that person's so confident. That person asked the question. I don't have the courage to do that. Mm. And the most of the time, I think we all get in our own heads about how much people think about us and, you know, what it matters. At the end of the day, everyone's thinking about themselves for the most part. So I think just realizing that you have a voice, you have ideas, you're not, like, you ask a question and you're going to get an answer. And if it's a bad question or something, you're like, oh, I should have known that. Great. Now you do. And you'll know it for next time. So don't make the same mistakes over and over, but never be afraid to ask the question or be afraid to fail if it's something that you haven't done before, because there's no other way to learn than by learning and trying and figuring things out along the way.
Hell yeah. Mic drop. Go do the damn thing. Best thing you can do for us here today is, if you know somebody that could gain value from this episode, just like you did, please share it with them. Give us that 5-star rating and review. That's the best way to help this show continue to grow. This is CJ Finley with the Thrive on Life podcast. Until next time, thrive on, y'all.
What's up, y'all? This is CJ again. And on behalf of the small team here at Thrive on Life, I'd like to thank you for listening to one of our episodes. Our mission in life is to help people like you fuel your passion and make every heartbeat count. And we realize the best way to do this is together as a team. So we'd love for you to join in on this mission and connect with like-minded individuals within our Thrive on Life community. To do so, please head to thriveonlife.com and connect with us there. We'd love to chat with you. Before I sign off, I'd like you to always remember one thing. When we strive together, we thrive together. So please do your part in helping others thrive on life.